This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. By one estimate, we've seen over half of American households own stocks. By another, at least 10 million Americans do their own investing online. Those numbers represent an enormous shift in the way Americans think about the stock markets. Not so very long ago, conventional wisdom held that average people couldn't grasp the intricacies of Wall Street and make smart investments on their own. Not anymore. DIY is a fixture in the world of investment. But that's not to say that it's easy. You probably know what a mutual fund is, but what about an index fund or a PEG ratio? How do you analyze a company by its profit margin or its management philosophy? When is it time to hire a stockbroker, and how do you pick a good one? David Gardner devotes his time to helping people sort through those decisions, along with his brother Tom. He's the co-founder of The Motley Fool, which started as a 16-page newsletter back in 1993. Now it's a multimedia company that helps people puzzle their way through the process and tries to provide a few laughs along the way to the bank. David Gardner joins us today, and we'll be talking with him on Talk of the Nation from time to time to answer your questions. We do have to begin, though, with a limitation. Neither he nor I will offer any advice on whether to sell this particular stock or buy that one. But if you have questions about the way things work or about the way they ought to, about trends, about philosophies of investment, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is talk@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll talk with a student of Apple culture about the news that Windows will now be able to run on Macs. It was reported to be at least a chilly day in hell yesterday. But first, David Gardner of Motley Fool is with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program, David.
A pleasure to be here, Neil, on a beautiful spring day here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, but why don't we begin with a question about Apple and yesterday's announcement, the release of that new software product called Bootcamp. What is it? Why should we care?
Well, we should care because this is the first time that Apple has really enabled users, Apple purchasers, to end up using Windows on their Apple computer. Mm-hmm. And Apple has increasingly become a hardware company. Obviously, the iPod has really change the way that people perceive Apple. And really, if you talk to kids, anybody 20 years or younger these days, they've all heard of Apple. They all know the iPod. They may or may not know the Mac or the iMac. But all of us who've been around for a few decades are pretty surprised to see Apple go this direction. And I think I'm impressed. The stock market certainly was.
What, 10% increase in Apple stock yesterday?
Yeah. And, you know, any one day of trading is just one day of trading. But a 10% gain for a company already that large represents billions of dollars added, actually, to Apple's market cap in just one day.
Well, again, we're going to talk about the cultural aspects of this later. But as somebody was saying in the newspaper, Apple had changed its religion. I wanted to ask you about the example of the iPod. If that had been designed just to work with Mac systems, iPod wouldn't be the major factor it is.
No, it would not. And there's no question that Microsoft felt threatened and recognized a little too late just how powerful the iPod would and could be. And obviously, we talk a lot about the iPod, but that iTunes music store that it hooks into online is another big product release and such a key thing for Apple. So Apple, for once in this case, got the jump on the big behemoth over there in Renton, Washington.
All right. Now, yesterday, this is also news, a jury found that pharmaceutical giant Merck was liable in contributing to the injury of a former Vioxx user. They awarded the man $4.5 million. Now, Merck had won some of these cases earlier. How bad is this?
Well, again, if you use the stock market as a proxy, and I do find that a helpful way to judge the headlines in some cases, Merck stock today in reaction trading down 3%. In other words, it was considered about a third as impactful as Apple's move yesterday for its stock. That's a way of saying that I think that the Vioxx story has already been covered. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. The biggest danger to Merck and other companies like it is the possibility for greater class action lawsuits. Part of the news yesterday was this possibility that a union says, you know, if we had known that Vioxx was what it was, we would never have actually contracted with our insurance companies and bought this product. So that could really open the door to a lot of pharmaceutical companies getting threatened by lawsuits that they never expected by people who were not even actually buying the product direct. Mm-hmm. So it is potentially troubling for Merck. Merck is, you know, a $75 billion company today. So it's not like this is going to crack Merck. But it's a sad story from start to finish, and the lawsuits are obviously a never-ending threat for pharmaceutical companies.
Let me ask you an ethical question. We just talked about two different companies, Apple and Merck. News you said for Apple was positive. For Merck, not so good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you own stock in these companies? If you do, do you disclose that?
I own stock neither in Apple nor Merck. If I were to have mentioned, or if I do mention today another company that I do, I will certainly mention. I think that's very important. We've always done that at The Motley Fool, actually. Anybody can go to our website and see exactly what stocks I hold, and actually any member of our staff, we have about 200 employees from our receptionist right through to my brother Tom, anyone can see what stocks we own. That's a self-initiated disclosure that we've done at Fool.com for a long time.
All right, let's get some listeners involved in this conversation who will probably have better questions than I do. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And Tony's on the line with us. Tony calling from San Antonio.
Yes, sir. I just had one question. I'm in San Antonio, Texas, and I was fortunate to, although I have a lack of education, I got some extra money to toy with, and I've invested in 457s and Roth IRAs, but I want to get more aggressive with the extra money I have, and I don't have any knowledge of the stock market. What's the best resource that's available for someone in my situation that wants to get into it?
I think the best resource, Tony, is your library, actually, because I think for a lot of us, the first best step we can do is get educated about stock market investing, really any aspect of money, I think. And, of course, these days you can read a lot online for free, but there are some wonderful books out there, just primers about the stock market and getting into it. Peter Lynch's book, One Up on Wall Street, is a Wall Street classic. It was written 20 years ago, but it reads like it was written yesterday. And it's just a great, you know, here's a guy who was the most successful money manager of his time, and he retired and said, you know what, you all can do better than I did, and here's how. He goes on to point out that he has all sorts of restrictions as a professional money manager, that he had to keep buying lots of stocks because people kept throwing money at him, so he had to own hundreds of stocks, and that doesn't mean he may have only had 100 good ideas and have to buy 500 stocks. So, Tony, I think you and I, as people who are, I'm self-taught myself, I think that it starts with the written word, and it starts with understanding some of the basics, like the growth in sales and the growth in earnings of companies. And these days, certainly on the internet, Yahoo, for example, does a great job. Google just launched Google Finance last week. That can be a good complement to your reading. You can look up the history of different stocks and how they've done, both graphically and visually with charts, and also just all the numbers these days. And maybe a final tip I'll give you is that I find in terms of picking stocks, I really start with companies that I know and love. And for example, I love video games. That's just one of my things. I'm 39. I've been playing them for 25 years. My children play them now. So I own a number of video game companies. I own about 30 stocks, maybe three or four of them are video game companies. But I would highly suggest that you pick your first stock, a company you know and you love. And that final compliment I was going to mention is the websites of companies themselves. We have this great opportunity to go to any website today and learn directly from the company. Just see its products in action, medical technology or video games. There's so much wonderful information out there. We are very lucky compared to investors 30 years ago.
Awesome. I'll have to check out that book and thanks for taking my call.
Good luck to you, Tony.
Thanks.
Some listeners may have a hard time with his concept of extra money. But anyway, let's get another caller on the line. And this is Jason. Jason's with us from Kansas City.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a new dad, new family, new house, you know, kind of starting everything off. And one of my goals for this year was to begin buying some stocks and doing some trading online myself. But it seems like a lot of places I look, they seem to have a pretty high cost of entry. Hmm. You know, you have to have $1,000 to start trading with this account or whatever. Is there any place that you might be able to recommend or some resources to kind of start low, get my feet wet, just see if this is something I'm interested in doing?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, it's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that, because often my brother and I will go around the country, give speeches about investing, talk about stocks, a passion for us, something that we were taught ourselves by our dad. And then I'll have this very successful-looking professional who's wearing a suit and tie come up afterwards and go, I enjoyed that, and I'm still learning this myself, but the one thing you guys didn't tell me is, how do I actually buy or sell stock? And we often forget that simple step, and it really is simple. So it's just like opening the bank account many of us did during high school or after high school. And what it comes down to is, filling out a form and opening up a brokerage account at a brokerage firm. And you're talking about the difficulty maybe of finding good, easy entry routes. I will say you should click around a lot on the internet these days. Discount brokers, I think Schwab was really kind of the pioneer here 30 years ago, came in and said, you know, if you're going to make the decisions yourself, we won't charge you as much because we're not having to fund our own research and other expensive services. We're just going to be your order taker. So give us your order online these days. A lot of people do it and pay maybe somewhere between $9 and $30 to do trades. And that's a lot less that traditionally than the so-called full-service brokerage industry, which would charge the in hundreds of dollars and often wouldn't even disclose the actual fee schedule at some of Wall Street's biggest firms. In some cases, you still can't ask them and get the actual schedule for what you would be paying for your commissions because they kind of keep that cloaked. But I would recommend you look at discount brokers, and I won't throw out many. I'll throw out a few names. I'm not here to plug any one of them, but Schwab, Ameritrade, E-Trade, those are probably the leaders today. But there are lots of other options, and I would encourage you to look around online.
Great. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Jason. Email question from Sherry Combs. What type of funds in a 401k should I move my funds to when I feel the stock market is ready to turn bearish and decline? I want to preserve my capital and not lose 30% like I did in the last major turndown.
Well, first of all, you can simply move it to cash and money markets. If you truly are bearish, if you have a real conviction that the market will decline in value, which, by the way, I would have some questions about. The market does decline in value. However, I spend a lot of time looking at this myself. I hold accountable lots of people on Wall Street who I don't think are very good at calling where the stock market's headed next. But what I would do within a 401k plan is I would simply shift to cash or money markets and get that, you know, 2 or 3% return. Certainly bond funds are a good option for a lot of people, especially as we get near retirement. We should start mixing in away from stocks, which we at the Motley Fool counsel all the time. Younger people should be 100% generally in the stock market and just leave it there for three decades. But bond funds are a medium option there. You have the conservatism of cash money market, and then you have the stock market. Bonds are there for you in between.
We're going to talk about strategies for investing with Dave Gardner of Motley Fool when we continue after the break. More of your calls, 800-989-8255, if you'd care to join us, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about your money and your life with David Gardner of Motley Fool. We can't tell you what to buy or what to sell, but if you have questions about market trends, how the market works, or how it ought to work, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And, David, I wanted to ask you, Jeffrey Skilling, the former top Enron executive, is about to take the stand in the big-time trial there in Houston. That might not happen till tomorrow. But in general, as you look at the debacle of Enron, what are you taking away from that experience and from this trial?
Well, the first thing I can tell you I'm not taking away is the investment that I had in Enron, because I was one of those who owned some shares as it went down to nothing. I just had it in one of my son's accounts, and I think probably I behaved with Enron as many Americans did, which is just to observe the success of the company, the size of the company, you know, $40 or $50 billion company. We were fooled because the financial statements were rigged, and so I was operating off of numbers that I thought were true.
Mm-hmm.
Tom and I, my brother Tom, who also helps me at the Motley Fool, we interviewed Ken Lay. He seemed like a great guy. I mean, we had a really wonderful interview with him in Houston, and so overall, I had a very positive feeling about Enron. Another big part of the story, as you'll remember, Neil, is that they were able to hire pretty much anybody they wanted to at any business school or coming out of undergrad. All the smart minds were headed toward Enron. So it was a huge surprise. I think if you actually want something to take away as opposed to what I couldn't take away, the investment I had in it, I think it is that you need to remain diversified. Certainly the people who were hurt the most were those who worked at Enron and had most of their retirement account in their company's stock. I'm happy to say that despite losing money in Enron, as I mentioned earlier, I own about 30 different stocks. So if one of them goes down to zero, which happens very infrequently, I'm happy to say, it still doesn't hurt me that much. That would be about 3% of my account, and as long as the other stocks perform okay, I'm okay. So diversification is probably the best lesson investors can take away from Enron. There are probably about five others we could talk about.
All right. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Kathleen. Kathleen's with us from San Anselmo in California. Go ahead, Kathleen.
I am. Hi. I have two sons who are ages 9 and 12. And we're trying to put some money away for college for them. We started their accounts a few years back, put them in mutual funds, which really did kind of, one account did fairly poorly. One's done okay. I'm looking at putting some more money in and using some other avenues like index funds or spider funds, or are there other vehicles that I should consider?
Kathleen, I think you, first of all, congratulations for getting started. A lot of us, Tom and I, my brother and I, speak to lots of Americans, and they're 49, and all of a sudden they need to start saving for themselves for the first time. So to hear you talking about how you're already invested for your sons, and they still have 10 years or so before college, is great to hear. To answer your question directly, I truly believe that the index fund is the starting investment for most of us, especially if we don't want to pick stocks directly. I have a passion about picking stocks directly. That's what I love. That's what I was taught. Mutual funds were an afterthought for me as I was raised by my dad to think stock market. But the index fund gives you the stock market's average return year in and year out. The traditional return has been about 10% per year. That means that on average, every 6.5 or 7 years, you will double your money. That means for your 12-year-old, if you invest, or if you were 100% invested in index funds today, you could double the amount that you have there in your mind as you project what you'll have for freshman year of college for your son. Maybe that doesn't sound like enough. And if that's the case, you could pursue a slightly more aggressive strategy and pick stocks. Again, that's what I do. But you should only do that eyes wide open, feeling confident in your investment choices. A lot of us do well to mix an index fund with some stocks on the side. So it sounds as if you're dissatisfied with what you've seen from your mutual fund so far. To close on that, I will say, Kathleen, as you may know or may not, 8 out of 10 mutual funds lose to the market's average every year. The index fund gives you the market average. Therefore, the index fund tends to outperform most of the other funds out there. And that's why our simple Motley Fool logic, we like to keep it really simple, suggests most of us should just be in index funds.
Now, part of the problem that Kathleen and others in her position might have, though, is that the price of college seems to be increasing a lot faster than the index of the stock market.
It does. And, you know, if you continue to project out those numbers, Neil, I think it becomes unsustainable. I truly believe we'll see fundamental changes in how higher education happens in our society. I think the internet will have something to do with it, or the experience will become rarefied air for only a small percentage of people who are 18 and 19. And that isn't necessarily that bad. I sometimes question whether we need those 4 years, 19 through 22, to be spent in the traditional manner that it was by me and others in our undergraduate years for me 20 years ago. I think that a lot of us could probably accelerate our learning online and target it a little bit more and maybe be out and done quicker. So I'm not sure that four-year experience offline is the way it's going to be done, even in 10 years.
4 years for you? You slacker.
You know,
Kathleen, good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Uh-huh.
And let's turn now to, put the wrong button. Mike. Mike's with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I had a question about if you're going to do some day trading, if you want to do the research, what kind of sources do you use? Where would you go? And what kind of information would you be looking for?
Let me ask you, Mike, why do you want to do day trading?
Basically just kind of supplement some income, have a little fun, learn about the stock market.
Okay. I think that the experience of day trading is not one we typically recommend at the Motley Fool. I'll speak to that briefly first. And that's because for a lot of us, we don't have the time. And and you end up having to keep your nose at your monitor a lot during the day. And we feel as if we'll do better with our investing and actually have more time to spend doing other things if we buy and hold patiently.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, there are a lot of very engaged people who really do enjoy shorter-term stock market investing. And I think that if I were approaching things that way, I would probably spend a lot of time at Yahoo and Google and learn as much as I could about charting, which is what a lot of people do who day trade these days. And that's kind of why I don't do that. But I guess to finish that answer, which was a poor one, I will say I don't know of a lot of resources online because I, frankly, in my 25 years, have just never day traded personally. We have a lot of people who come to our website and do that. They look at the stocks, you know, on a weekly or daily basis, and I just don't do it. So I'm probably not your good educational teacher there.
If I may elaborate a little bit,
yeah.
When you're looking at a company, what kind of trends are you looking for from that company, or what kind of forecasting, or what are you looking at for their history, where they're going, their management, things along those lines? I mean, I'm sure all those are going to have some kind of effect on the stock.
Mike, I look at three things. Two of them are numerical. The first thing I look at numerically is I like to look at the top line of the company. When you look at their income statement, that's nothing more than the growth of their sales over the course of time, because that gives me a pretty good indicator of how large the company is and what its trajectory is, the growth rate of that. Then I look at the bottom line on the income statement, and that is the profit that that company has created either of the last quarter or the last 5 years. And I like to see that as a percentage of the first number I mentioned, sales. Tells me how many pennies on the dollar this company is actually cranking out in profit. And so those are two things that I would recommend everybody look at. And then finally, number three, subjectively, I would suggest that you get to know what that industry, what that company's industry is, and what its presence within that industry is. For me, I spend a lot of time asking, you know, will these guys be around in 10 years? I like to find disruptive innovators, companies like iRobot today, which is, I think, going to displace some of the traditional, you know, Electrolux and Hoover business, because they have robotic vacuum cleaners that do the work for me. That's a simple example. Starbucks, Netflix, some of these are companies that I own. I own those too. Many I don't. Apple is a great example of innovative companies where I have a good feeling in 10 years, because of their profits and sales that I just mentioned, that they'll be around and positioned as a leader. I do, to close, like to buy the leader.
Hmm. Well, great, fellas. I appreciate it.
Good luck, Mike.
Thanks.
Let me ask you, one of the things that seems to be constantly in the news these days is the explosive growth in China. How would you start to invest in a company in China? You just look up China Incorporated. How do you go about it?
It's a great question, Neil. I do own a couple of Chinese stocks, but those are very speculative for me because I feel as if I'll be the last guy to hear the bad news about my Chinese semiconductor company or my Malaysian telecommunications company. So typically with international investing, which I do find a useful thing to do and to pay attention to, I think exchange-traded funds, ETFs, are the way to go. So these days you can buy a mutual fund that is a basket of Chinese mm-hmm. companies. So you don't have to be right about a given Chinese company, but I think you can be right about China or India. And so ETFs that are just exchange-traded funds concentrating on countries instead of just sectors are the way to go. I also like ETFs, for example, for alternative energy today. We've heard about high price of oil, we're all aware mm-hmm. of that. But then you hear about solar or wind. Some people talk about waves and water, all of these different energy sources, nuclear energy. I know that they're all going to become more relevant. I don't yet know which are the companies that are going to win the battle for providing us next generation energy. But there are ETFs that focus on alternative energy, so you can buy the basket.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller in. This is Elise. Elise calling from Carbondale, Illinois.
Hi, and I'm in the car, so I hope I don't break up.
Okay, us too.
I'm calling with a question about philosophy, and I'm only 28, and I've been thinking about trying to get into the stock market, but I really don't want any of my money to go to companies that are not environmentally aware and conscious and doing things that are good for the environment, and I don't want any of my money to go to companies that are anti-labor or anything like that. Do you have any advice for how to find a company or a stock person who can help me figure it out, do they have to share my philosophy, or can I just go in and say that that's what I want and then they'll do that?
I'd be happy to give you some advice there, Elise. First of all, that's admirable what you've described. I call that very foolish, since I wear a jester cap sometimes in the office, on a given day. Foolish is good. That's with a capital F. And what I think you're saying is that you want to make sure that your money, as you invest it, is aligned with your own beliefs. I will
right.
point out that if you invest in mutual funds, you or with a broker, you are giving your money over to somebody else who probably, chances are, does not 100% agree with everything you do. That's why one of the reasons we advise people to get to know the stock market and learn investing over time is because you can then invest directly in companies that you know and love and believe in and not be worried that your money is misdeployed by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the inherent nature of investing in mutual funds means you will always be giving it over to somebody else. That said, there are some funds. There's something called the Calvert Social Index put out by the Calvert Fund Group, and a lot of people use that social index today and the companies that make that comprise it to say, you know, those are good companies. They've been vetted along a few different principles that you could read about, see if you agree with it. And then you could look for an ETF or an index fund that focuses on the Calvert Social Index. That is one answer. It's not the only one, but it's an example. And so there are answers for you, Elise. And, you know, I also did mention the alternative energy exchange-traded fund with our last caller, and that would be an equal answer for you as well, something to check out.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Good. Thanks for the call, Elise.
Thanks.
We're talking today with David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. I regret to report he's wearing headphones, not the cap. What can you do? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's talk now with Nate. Nate's with us from Kansas City.
Hi there.
Hi.
I've been a beginning investor, I guess, for several years now. I've done the index fund thing, and it's worked pretty well. At the beginning, I also toyed with choosing and evaluating specific stocks, not with real money, but with pretend money.
Mm-hmm.
And but it just all the research and the effort it took to try and make a good choice felt a bit overwhelming. And I'm wondering, is there a middle step that's good to move me from beginning to intermediate investor that isn't just, you know, randomly choosing an underperforming mutual fund that I'm going to have an 8 out of 10 chance of choosing?
Well, you know, I think it's great, first of all, that you've made the effort that you have, and I would not be dissuaded by initial failures picking stocks directly. I will say that we do all have the index fund to fall back on, and again, I think for a lot of us who do not want to be engaged with the topic of investing, don't feel it's a hobby or something that interests us, the index fund does provide a great answer. That said, my brother Tom and I have written and spoken about this for years and really would love to think that everyone in America would own one stock. And if you had to pick one stock, I would encourage you to ask, what business do you know best that you think will be around and successful over the next 20 years? I'll give an example. This is not a stock recommendation. This is a company we all know, and it's kind of an obvious one to me. I think I do own some shares of this one, but it's Federal Express. As I look at Federal Express, to me, that's a company that 20 years from now, as China and India grow, they are positioned globally to keep doing what they're doing and be successful with it. So if I had to own one stock, that would be an example of one that I might own. I own others, and by the way, there have been bad times to own even great companies like Federal Express. But I really encourage you to go back to that, the gut check, the Warren Buffett, the wonderful, famous investor who's been around and taught so many of us for so many years, says, you know, could you close your eyes, walk away for 10 years, come back, and feel comfortable that that stock has done well? Or another way he sometimes put it is, before I buy a stock, I ask myself this, would I be comfortable, not that I would, but would I be comfortable putting every last dollar I had in this world in that stock? And if I can say that I would, then I will buy the stock. And if I can't say that I would, I might not ever buy the stock.
I don't know if I could say that ever about anything.
But you know what that might suggest is that you feel as if you still have more learning to do, both about investing, testing and learning with your own investing, and finding companies and getting to know them a little bit better. And you describe that intermediate stage. I truly believe doing it on paper is a wonderful way. These days, you know, you can tap in watch lists and portfolios. It sounds like you've done some of that. I would also encourage you to go back to a point made earlier. I would encourage you to read a little bit. There are some wonderful books about investing that I think can push you up the slope and make you feel comfortable that one day you can stand atop with wild surmise and peek over and see the Pacific Ocean of investment success. So I truly believe that it's a process of doing, learning, doing, learning.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call, Nate. I don't know about that FedEx thing. I shipped a volleyball to a friend of mine in Australia. He never got it.
Neil, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's just
Wilson?
Yeah. When we come back from a short break, the CBS Evening. No, that's another hour of the program, and we're not going to be talking about that. When we come back from a short break, we're going to have more questions with David Gardner of The Motley Fool. And we're also going to be talking about the cultural aspects of something we talked about earlier with David, and that's the news that Apple has now introduced a new program you can download to run Windows on your Mac. This is a change of religion for Apple, as others have described it. So if you have another question for David Gardner, or if you'd like to talk about Mac's big decision today, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Novo Nordisk, working to improve diabetes treatment in the U.S. For 80 years, diabetes care has been our passion, not just our business. From the Pew Charitable Trusts, serving the public interest through information, policy solutions, and support for civic life, online at pewtrusts.org. And from the Wallace Foundation, supporting ideas, sharing solutions, expanding opportunities, on the web at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Across the country, a small but vocal group of black preachers has led its flock to the Republican Party.
If the Democratic Party is pro-gay marriage, then that means that I'm going to be on the Republican side.
But more and more, there's pushback from other pulpits fighting for the political soul of the black church. They on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Like the ship that's tossed and driven.
With us here in Studio 3A is David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about the culture of the Mac and how that's been changed by news that Mac has now provided the opportunity to run Windows on its computers. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to weigh in on that. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. But first, let's get a couple of more calls in for David Gardner. Adriana in San Antonio.
Good morning, gentlemen. I enjoy listening to both of your shows.
Well, thank you.
On the weekends, it's great, and even on the weekdays. I have a question for you, David. I have a six-year-old son, and my husband and I, we would like to raise a money-wise child, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you had any suggestions as to how we could accomplish that.
Yeah, I think the best thing that you can do, I mean, obviously there's the give them $5 a week, the allowance, so that you can take that approach, which is sort of a cliche today, and I'm not even sure that worked for me growing up. But I think what helped me most of all, Adriana, was having, in my case, a dad who was investing for me as I was being raised. So he started an account for me at age zero, and at age 18, when I was 18, that is, he gave me that account and said, here you go. This is all you'll ever be getting from me. Anything else that I have left will be going to your kids. So don't screw up. But I'm happy to say that in between the ages of 0 and 18, he did a good job investing for me. He bought Washington Post stock, which was our local newspaper growing up, did tremendously well. But he taught me about the stock market and about business.
That's what I was going to ask. Did he explain, I'm buying this stock for this reason, you see how well it's doing, and this one, boy, is that tanked, I'm getting rid of it.
That's exactly what he would do with many different companies. We looked through winners and losers. He used, back in that day, something called Value Line, which is still around today. It's this big, fat, black tome with a tremendous amount of numbers, kind of a page of numbers on every company of size in America. And so we would comb through that and think through and see how the stocks had done. And he taught me what some of the terms meant. Now, you may not have that technical inclination, Adriana, nor do you necessarily want to spend that much time. But I can tell you one thing. Simply investing for your boy at the age of six, you know, buy a stock. This is not one that I own, but DreamWorks Animation, right? So it's been a pretty successful company. I guess they have their next movie coming out, Over the Hedge, in a month or so. Mm-hmm. And you're able to let your son know, hey, you own a little part of that. If that movie does well, chances are you'll make a profit. Just connecting for our kids this sense that the products and services that we appreciate in our lives, we're all different, we like different stuff, but whatever we appreciate, we can be part owners of the companies that provide those. And I think for a lot of Americans, that's a message we need to hear and sometimes be reminded of. Most of the business headlines seem to me are either negative or they're about the high price of oil or gold hitting this crazy high. The passive stories of great companies, you know, just the success, let's say, of Palm in recent years, or, you know, I think of a crazy company like Netflix and how well it's done, breaking the almost blockbuster video monopoly on rentals in this country. I mean, these are great stories. And the nice thing is we can tie our kids' destinies in some ways financially to how those companies do. So sharing that and teaching that and making them in touch with what capitalism is, I think is very helpful.
Well, thank you very much. That was great advice. You have a good day.
Good luck.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And an email question, this from Josh. What do you think of avoiding investment according to growth in favor of stability in dividends? Is this approach underrated, overrated?
I think it's an excellent approach. If you go back historically, over the history of the stock market, a lot of the profit that you would have gotten as an investor has come from dividends, companies that pay back a portion of their earnings directly to shareholders. That's what dividends are, by the way. It's just paid for directly out of profits, money paid right back to you as a shareholder. And so I would encourage a lot of us to look at dividends. It's a stabler way, as you're pointing out, of investing. One of our services at The Motley Fool is focused on income investing, and that's what it's called. And I would encourage all of us to understand, first of all, what a dividend is. I hope I define it well, Neil. And then to seek out some companies that do that. No question, as we get toward our retirement years, those are the safer, stabler companies, the large ones that can pay dividends.
Let's get one last call in for David Gardner. And this is Eric. Eric's with us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hi. Thank you, Neil. And by the way, we did find your volleyball callers ago. I do work for FedEx, and overall I've been treated very well by that company. They do what they say they're going to do. However, the ball had the word Wilson on it, so he gave it to Tom Hanks.
Oh, well, he gets everything, doesn't he? He got all those Oscars. Go ahead.
This is unfair.
There's a great article on the web today on the Motley Fool website about the Big Bang. It really gave me a comfort level. It's very George Willian, like a futurist, but I think it made a lot of sense, and I encourage everybody to look at that piece that ran on your website.
Okay.
And the question is, your opinion quickly on Share Builder, or any, is there any other product out there like that? It's a community approach, and I'll be quiet now. And
I'm glad you mentioned it. Earlier we had a caller who was asking about cheap ways to get started investing. ShareBuilder is an example. There are other services, so I'm not here specifically to plug ShareBuilder. I'll just explain the basic concept. That is that for those of us who don't have $10,000 to invest right away but want to get started investing, ShareBuilder and a few other services online like it enable you to buy portions of shares. For example, if you wanted to buy a share of a stock that trades at $110 a share and you only have $55, you can pool your money via this brokerage account with ShareBuilder or something like it with others, and then they just buy shares together and you get, you know, your half share. So normally you couldn't buy a half share, but thanks to the internet today and that kind of a business model, which is successful and I think works, it enables lots of people to, with lesser amounts of money, buy the same stocks everybody else is able to buy. So I think it's a good idea, and it's generally a cheap way to do it as well. It's not an expensive way to get started.
Eric, thanks very much. Appreciate the call. And David Gardner, we appreciate your time today. It was so exciting to have you on the radio. I'm sure somebody just called you there a couple of minutes ago to let you know you were on the radio. David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. He'll be with us from time to time on Talk of the Nation to take your calls. We appreciate you joining us.
I had a great time, Neil. Thank you very much.
And when we come back, we'll be talking about Mac and, well, the apocalypse.